Of the three branches of government, the legislative, the House of Representatives and the Senate, the executive, the president, and the judicial, the Supreme Court and the lower federal courts, which is the most powerful? Today, most people would probably say the judicial. It's the Supreme Court that has the final say over every controversial issue. Prayer in school, abortion, same-sex marriage, let the court decide, is the modern refrain. But that's a long way from how the framers saw the role of the courts. Let's look at what the Constitution says. Article 3, Section 1 vests the nation's judicial power in a Supreme Court and any lower courts that Congress may establish. The judges, both of the supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior and shall receive for their services a compensation which shall not be diminished. By good behavior, the framers meant lifetime tenure. As long as federal judges didn't do anything worthy of impeachment, they had the job for life, or until they chose to give it up. The purpose of lifetime tenure and salary was to place federal judges above politics, to make them independent of the legislative and executive branches. In this way, they would act as another check on the power of those two branches. Yet for all that, Alexander Hamilton thought the judiciary was beyond comparison the weakest of the three branches. Boy, was he wrong. But not in his assessment of the judicial branch as spelled out in the Constitution. As Hamilton explained, the executive bears the sword, or the power to coerce. Congress sets the rules and controls the purse, the federal budget. But what weapon did the judiciary have? Hamilton couldn't see any. He couldn't see any because he and the other framers never imagined that the court would be the ultimate arbiter of what was constitutional and what wasn't. They saw the court as having a much more limited function, as we shall see. The Constitution doesn't even state how many justices there should be. That was set by the first Congress of 1789. They set the number of justices at 6, which, to our modern sensibility, is bizarre. What would happen in the case of a tie vote? Again, this points to the framers' modest conception of the court. As spelled out in Section 2 of Article 3, federal courts have just one job, to settle disputes about the rights of the parties before them, not to use cases as platforms to resolve policy debates. For the framers, setting policy was the job of the people's elected representatives. What about the ability to declare laws unconstitutional? Didn't that belong to the courts? Yes, but that didn't make the courts the only authority on the Constitution. As understood by the framers, the legislative and executive branches have their own duty and power to interpret the Constitution when doing their jobs. For example, presidents have vetoed bills they considered unconstitutional. That's what Andrew Jackson did when he refused to recharter the National Bank in 1832. He didn't think the Constitution gave Congress the authority to establish such an institution. True, the president and Congress have usually followed the court's readings of the Constitution as a way of avoiding unnecessary conflict. But there have been exceptions. Most famously, Abraham Lincoln rejected the Supreme Court's holding in Dred Scott v. Sanford that the Constitution made African descendants of slaves ineligible for U.S. citizenship. As president, Lincoln respected the court's decision about what should happen to Scott, a party to the case. But otherwise, in running the executive branch, Lincoln followed his own view that persons of African descent could be citizens under the Constitution. For example, he gave them U.S. passports. Today, by contrast, many think the judiciary is exclusive and superior in its power to interpret the Constitution. No wonder it seems like the most powerful branch. The framers, who had so carefully constrained the power of the courts in Article 3, would have been surprised and dismayed. I'm Sharif Girgis, Associate Professor of Law at the University of Notre Dame for Prager University.